Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now!
Under the human rights law.
constituent in this country to have adequate and permanent housing. As we all know, throughout the city in the United States of America, homelessness is still a problem. In some cities, they still have transient people sleeping outdoors. In some cities, they have house and apartment buildings that are adequate for people that they're not just individuals. It's families, too. It's women and children that are not being protected under the Human Rights Amendment under the Articles 25. Tonight, I have a special guest that's going to explain her situation, and we're going to discuss it. Her name is Susie Parker. Ms. Parker. Hello, Ms. Parker. You have a lot of flack.
Yes, greetings. Yes, greetings.
Hello.
I'm here.
Okay. It's a lot of noise in the background.
Okay.
Ms. Parker?
Let's see what yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right.
How you doing this evening?
I am well, and yourself? Thank you.
I'm fine. I'd like to thank you for coming on our show of Black Urban America. And Ms. Parker, we're going to talk tonight. Will you explain a little bit about the situation?
Well, I am an advocate for those in low to moderate income housing due to the fact of me struggling to try to find affordable and efficient housing in the city of St. Louis. Been working with the Green Party, Universal African People's Organization, all types of organizations to try to get our communities to invest into housing, to make it adequate and efficient for people with no income, people with low income that might be on SSI or SSDI, as well as those that pay rent above 3%, they might be paying $900 a month. And my concern with that is that there's a waiting list for housing when we go to the housing authority. And when we go into the housing authority, they say that the waiting list is like 5 years old. So if you're getting federal dollars every year, twice a year for housing, and say that you are the incorporation to resolve the issue, problem solve the issue, and empower the person and family into self-sufficiency, then I expect that incorporation to be able to know if the landlord is a good landlord or if the house is up to par. We in the city of St. Louis keep dealing with slumlords. I have many advocates in the city that are activists that have moved 3 to 5 times out of the year due to dealing with slumlords in the city. Housing Authority has socialserve.gov as a resource to share with the community as though it is great landlords, great opportunities, and affordable housing. If we are not as people and leaders of the community trying to advance our incomes with our economic strategies of developing our own businesses, as well as the resources that we're supposed to get from all the city halls in every city in this country. And we are not empowering our people with an income above poverty level. It's something wrong with that picture. So it looks like to me everybody that's dealing with the welfare office is below $10,000 a year. If the banking system is saying that the black community has like $5.04 to spend, pertaining to all the other cultures having at least $100 to spend, then we are not keeping up with equality, the seats of those that are to empower us, getting our federal tax dollars and the federal contracts that's coming through. They are in default due to them not empowering groups of people as well as individuals and cultural heritage of the individuals and the groups being empowered into income that would be above the cost of living and have common wealth and their needs met. If the senators and the congressmen income is $147,000 to $247,000, why can't you work for the people that's your constituents to get the same amount of income? No one should be below $1,000. When I first looked up the statistics on poverty, it was $40,000. It has went down to $21,000 after I got another statistic on it. Now it's at $12,000 for the year. Nobody can feed themselves off of that. We can't pay no $900 rent. Section 8 shouldn't be having no $800, $900 rent because it's competition with those that are trying to have affordable housing. If it's going to be back in the day, my grandparents had a rooming house, and each bedroom was $100. We did not count the living room, the dining room, the foyer, the bathroom, and the kitchen to say that you got to pay $900. So on these deeds for housing, it is worth $1. In the mortgage part of the injustices of housing, they are overcharging us with the mortgage companies are committing fraud to where is we have two and three times the amount of creditors on one title. So the Department of Justice is kind of is looking into this. I came across that information due to one of our advocates that just transitioned, Ms. Anita Curran. She has always been talking about NACA. And I went to NACA, and NACA is a federal contract as well. The opportunity with that to become a homeowner is my credit score is 499. I qualified for a loan at $68,000. The payment for the mortgage would have been $450 a month, and I only paid $3,000 down. So I think with a credit score of 499 at the least was pretty good because I got approved for the loan. And that was me working $10 an hour and being on SSI, getting the monthly income for Social Security. With $10 an hour, the opportunity is like $750 per month coming in. If I do I do CDS work, which is attendance work, taking care of my elders that's disabled or anyone that's disabled, and wash their dishes, run errands, wash clothes, and help them to tidy up and help them to stay independent. With affordable housing being that could be self-sufficient, I was on Section 8. So Section 8 issue was that the gas bill was too high. So being on Section 8, if you pay your light and gas or you don't pay your light and gas bill, you will get put off of Section 8, which is not a good practice for anybody that is wanting to be empowered or become self-sufficient. So
let me ask you something, Ms. Parker. First of all, before I get into this, I'd like to tell anyone that have a comment, you dial 909-265-9215 and press 1 if you have a comment or you want to say something. Now, you speak of empowerment. Empowerment to me means independence, financial independence and what have you. Now, if we're going to be independent, how come we should rely on these federal tax dollars?
Well, because we have put our tax dollars into the system. And to be independent, the strategy was at first from WhiteHouse.gov, from City Hall, the strategy at first was empowerment and self-sufficiency. But instead of that, they have dependency, have taught dependency instead of self-sufficiency. So the different entities of incorporations have took it on themselves to say that we cannot manage our own business. So we can manage our own business. We are not a minority. We are the majority. So being the majority, you are authorized to handle your own matters. So Section 8, for those that's on Section 8 do not know about self-sufficiency. The self-sufficiency plan from Section 8 is to be on the program for 5 years. You work, you get a job, you come off of TANF. You can have your food stamps and you can have your Medicaid. And so with the opportunity of coming off of Section 8, you will go into home ownership. So I haven't seen a program for that or heard of it because those that's on Section 8 don't even get a newsletter talking about self-sufficiency. This only came about that I know this because I went into the building to get the resources. They do not mail this information out as public information. So that has been a problem for those on Section 8. So I like the contract that NACA has. I'm going to keep talking about NACA because I see some flaws there, but I see some opportunities there, and it is self-sufficiency because you can have your land with a house on it, with your business on the land, and that's the noctis contract. So I'm working towards my goals of my NACA.org.
Okay. You know what? You have somebody that has a question. Again, if you have a question or a comment, just press 1. 0118. Welcome to Black Earth America.
Greetings. I'm calling from Georgia, and I'm enjoying the show, and I'm really loving the topic. There are a lot of programs that's available to people, I know, in our area to purchase their own home. USDA has a program where they would purchase the land for you if your credit is up to par. If you have been working on your job for a significant amount of time, they will assist you in building your own home from the ground up. That is USDA rural housing. They used to be Farmers Home. They have a program like for rural areas. And I know out there in Missouri and areas like that where there's large, vast, lots of land that's untouched, that's where that type of program. Also, Habitat for Humanity has a excellent program as well. But what I see with Habitat, with that socialist program, you don't reap the benefits from the tax break. I don't know what kind of clause they got in there, but it's some type of way you don't get a tax form back where you can reap the benefits of being a homeowner on your tax return. Being a homeowner puts equity and value into your budget. When you purchase a home, you get certain write-offs every year during tax time. And as the sister says, if you're working, because I don't want to relegate people living on Section 8 to people who's just drawing SSI checks and whatever have you, not that anything is wrong with that or on TANF, but a lot of our people that are living in these areas are working poor people. I know sisters that work two jobs paying astrological amounts of rent. Up to $800-$900 a month for rent in these housing projects. The federal government is getting fat like frogs off of us because of these paternalistic programs. During the civil rights era, what was supposed to have happened, we were supposed to have been given some form of self-determination, self-governance, and some control over our resources. But instead, you know, you had Negroes in high places that manipulated the masses and were pacified for a few little handouts and scraps when they should have been paying reparations off the rip. We should be owning our property. We should be owning our land territory. So we don't want to just relegate this to poor folks who's in these areas. It was a massive plan during the 1960s. Matter of fact, after World War II, to put people into these ghettos and move people out of those rural areas where they actually owned the land into these ghettos, into these housing projects, into these areas. You had conservative social scientists who set up and did this. So the name of the game now should be, when you get your income tax check, I know if you're a mother of four or two or three children, and you work and make at least $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 per year, or more per year, you will be getting a tax return between $6,000 and $10,000, or $6,000 and $8,000. I say put that money in the bank for 2 or 3 years, and you'll have enough to put a down payment on some land and a home. That's equity. We need to get out of paying equity in other people's property.
Let me ask y'all two sisters a question. Okay, let's say I'm an individual living in a housing project. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm working, but it's an unskilled labor. Now, how can I wrap my mind where I'm having a hard time meeting the rent and buying the basic needs for my wife and children? I'm living in a housing unit. How can I wrap my mind to think, to start considering and buy land and property?
Well, first, the first thing you need to do is come up with a plan. Just because we're in a certain predicament or in a certain socioeconomic background, that doesn't give you negate the fact that you should have a plan. We should stop using those things as an excuse. A lot of things we go through is because we've been beaten down mentally. Everybody should have a plan. I don't care if you're sweeping out the caboose, you need to have a plan. Everybody should have a plan. So you sit down and write out a budget. And once you have that budget, you stick to it. We should be setting aside X amount of dollars towards that goal. It could be the goal of purchasing a car. A car is an asset. But what do? The first little bit of extra change we get, we want to go around. We want to go party it up. We want to go paint our butts with the town. Brand new living room, living in Section 8. I know a lot of sisters, you know, when I stayed in the project, you walk into their houses, you look like you walking straight into one of those rooms full of furniture, or you would think you're going to a mansion or a palace. But, you know, you're living in Section 8, or they'll go take it. If it's 2018, you go buy a 2018 car. But you're living in a project, and you're making a $500 a month payment, but your rent is $8. Something's wrong with that picture. So you got to have a plan and put your priorities in perspective. It's okay to want nice things, and it's okay to have nice things. But why would you go and put yourself in debt for a car, okay? You need an asset like a house. A house has equity. You could benefit off that house every year. You could write certain things on that house off every year. So it's about financial management. And it's about knowing what your priorities are. Even if you're dirt poor, I don't care if you're picking up cans, you got to have a plan.
Ms. Parker, can you answer the question?
Yes. With a plan from City Hall for these federal contracts, I want accountability. The accountability was to be on Section 8. It was affordable, not $900 rent. Them helping us to build an economy, to get income above poverty level, and the self-sufficiency of home ownership. That is still the plan for Section 8, those that's on Section 8, been on it for 5 years or more, working and off of the welfare. So that was their first plan, which we really need to hold them accountable and not sweep that under the rug. So what I'm asking for is investors in the Black community, especially the realtors, because I don't see them doing anything. I see them giving monies, but I don't see them putting anything back into the community. I would ask if they would invest into our utilities and our rental assistance and our mortgage assistance, because those that's no income, those that's low income, and those on market rate income, they're struggling with those things because of the incorporations that's tied together. The utility company, the housing authority, the City Hall friendship, kinship stuff. We are never involved at the table to say how we want to do things. When those of us that's activists go to the table, they take our ideas and use our ideas and don't involve us. I am one. I've been an activist since 91, started out with ACORN, ended up with Green Party, been outreach for Green Party all the time. Now I have a political strategy for economic strategies as well as committees of action. So the Department of Housing that we can create should be something that's affordable for below poverty level. We have to know what is poverty. We cannot ignore the cost of living. We cannot ignore Commonwealth not being fulfilled by those that we voted in, those seats, and we have to hold them accountable. So I'm talking about the least of that.
I have another question for both of you again.
Yes.
How can we get out of this situation if we continue to go to the same institution that make up the policies that are against us? And also, how can we keep on going to the same institution and relying on them for assistance when a lot of people say we should be helping ourselves?
Exactly. If I may take this first. One thing that we have done, first, let me introduce myself. I'm a member of the American Institute of Human Rights. We are a non-governmental organization. And what we have done is creation of a confederated nation state, which would give us a political organ and a juridical personality to correct some mistakes that was made not just during the Civil Rights era, but there were some things that was supposed to have happened after slavery, according to international and human rights law. We use international human rights law to deal with our situation, and we use that framework. After slavery, our ancestors had a right to return back to their homelands, whether it was in Africa or here in the United States. They had a right to integrate or vote on integrating into the United States government's politicity. And they had a right to become a commonwealth or have their own state. But they had that right to, you know, to have self-determination and self-governance. And after slavery, our ancestors told General Sherman that, and several other statements was made, and you can find these in various historical documents. Well, instead of that, the United States government and its officials issued unilateral executive orders such as the Emancipation Proclamation, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. And what they did was they took the physical chains off, but they re-enslaved us legally, economically, and politically. And as a result, our human capital, our labor, our wealth, our resources was colonized. They took it and they misappropriated it. And they're still doing that today. That's what you see right now on the local level. I know here in Georgia, there's areas in the state of Georgia where they would take the tax base from the black folk, utilities and structures, and make sure they have access to water and good sewage, trash pickup. But they would exclude the poor black folks whose tax base they've been, collecting taxes off of. So we're colonized. We've been recolonized over and over again. Now let me go to the 1960s during the Civil Rights era. When Latin America was decolonizing, after World War II, when Latin America was decolonizing, when Africa was decolonizing, when Asia was decolonizing, the United States was supposed to have been decolonizing too, and they were supposed to have put us
on what you call a non-self-governing list because to the United Nations, and they have a treaty with the United Nations, and they agreed to put all their colonial people and non-self-governing people on a list that would have pulled them out of the jurisdiction of the United States and given them a right to control their own land territories, their own human capital, their wealth, and their resources. But what did the United States do? As a matter of fact, what did our leadership do? Strategically place Negroes who were controlled by the Jews, the NAACP, which was a Jewish-led organization. They had the audacity to march up and down the street, march us up and down the street, and encourage Martin Luther King to march us up and down the road for integration while they were making sure for themselves. They erected a whole nation state on and utilized every international law and human rights law to make sure that they were treated as a autonomous people, as an independent people. They went and erected a whole state on top of another independent people. And then on top of that, here in the United States, they controlled every area in which they lived in. Okay? They control whole entire communities, and they made sure they got treated with the utmost respect. But what did they do for us? They wanted us to have to be re-enslaved legally, economically, and politically. That's where they led us. So what we have done is we erected a confederated nation state. And we have where everybody can be a part. It does not matter if you're more. It does not matter whether you're Afrocentric. It does not matter if you're a tribe, clan, you're from a church. We have a declaration where you can sign and say, you know what, we are reconfigurating our relationship with the United States. We're declaring our indigenous status. And in this declaration, we're saying we're controlling our identity, we're controlling our political form, we're reconfiguring our political relationship with the United States so we can have self-determination, self-governance, and have an independent economic system that we control and that serves us first. You see what I'm saying? So we have to go back in and redo some of the things that's been done to us. Now, what this sister is talking about, this is okay for now because that's a Band-Aid, and I'm being honest with you. But we have rights that allow us to control our spaces and places where we are the majority, the majority population in those areas. Everything in our areas are foreign or either white-owned and white-controlled. We don't control anything, but our tax base is paying the police to kill us, paying the schools to miseducate us, sales tax are paying other nationalities to sell us gas. Something wrong is wrong with that picture. So we have to use international and human rights. Yes?
Some people will argue that we are bringing it on ourselves. We are not becoming entrepreneurs. We are not protecting our families, our communities.
Others will argue that
due to our behaviors in the communities, that's why gentrification was so easy, because we're not putting nothing back into our own community where we live, and that's why we're being displaced.
That's a lie. Our issue is strictly beyond Leray Ray's mom. That's a red herring, what strategically placed Boule Negroes use and white people and that's been programming so-called upper crust, and not even upper crust Negroes, because I've seen Negroes that are not very intelligent use this argument. How good is your taxes going to do you when you have somebody who's over it and appropriating it and giving it away? That's beyond your control. The fact that we were recolonized That's beyond Lil Ray Ray's mama's control. That's beyond the brother who can't take care of his children because he's done a 10-year stint for selling a little marijuana on a nonviolent crime, but yet these white boys can go around here and sell it now and become part of the economy now and make millions off of it. Do you follow what I'm saying? There's a mm-hmm. lot of brothers sitting in jail right now. So that resource has been removed from our communities. We have things that's been beyond our control. Let's take a look at the war on drugs, period. Look at the disparity with the crack cocaine and the hard crack cocaine and the disparity with the white powdered cocaine. Okay, when Obama got in office, he didn't eliminate that disparity. He just upped the ante a little bit. But the black men were still arrested, but the white boys could sell pounds and kilos of the shit, okay? But who went to jail for the crack cocaine, the hard crack, okay? Where did they put the policing? In our communities. So when I hear Negroes their argument and try to blame black people for stuff that's way beyond their control, I always raise an eyebrow. We are in the condition that we're in because a rogue apartheid government who has recolonized and re-enslaved us over and over again, and piss poor, ignorant leadership, ignorant Negroes who are strategically placed, who white folks strategically put their dumb asses out in front, who make decisions and who are sitting at the table.
I'm sorry.
But strategically placed illiterate Negroes who knows nothing about the law, who knows nothing about human rights, who knows nothing about our history, sitting at the table making all types of decisions for us when we're not there because they've been put out in front and don't know anything about what's going on. Those are the Negroes. That's why we are the way we are. And that's why we spend most of our time educating people on their human rights and what's going on.
Let's get Ms. Parker in here. Ms. Parker, you want to handle that question? Ms. Parker?
I agree with her totally because that's where the way that she's talking about law is for us to be in charge of us to govern our own selves. I am learning that slowly towards I have different documents that is helping me to govern myself. I know that we are non-citizens. We are not a part of that incorporation. They do not support us. They support themselves and their families. We have to represent ourselves. I'm asking all realtors to come forward and do the right thing. You are with a incorporation that do not support the efforts of our people. Every city, you need to cover it. I ask again for investors for rental assistance, mortgage assistance, utility assistance until we get our documentation in place. So everybody that is a nationalist, they already know what to do. They should be really trying to help us in every city. The city takes care of itself, then the rural area will do the rest. So if we can own our own houses, land, and businesses, then we will have our own economy. My strategy is coming from Frederick Douglass and Acacia Hours. That is an economy that exists. It's cultural based. It is not they're purchasing homes. They're not using legal tender called money. They are using the currency of Frederick Douglass. So I haven't been able to talk to our people that's lawyers, none of that, legal service or whatever we want to call ourselves, yet about the Frederick Douglass strategy, because we have not went to the shelters to get the mothers and children out of the shelters yet. We just walked past that. Our ex-offenders don't have housing. The youth with babies don't have housing, so forth and so on. So we need to get our tax dollars amongst ourselves and build our own infrastructures and so forth and so on. So the national, be a indigenous aboriginal of the land, that's where we all are, and we should be representing ourselves.
Okay, with that, I would like to thank both of you for coming on Black Urban America. I thank you for your input. And I know you got a lot of listeners this evening, and I know a lot of people will benefit from your information, and I hope a lot of people will be motivated to follow up. And I thank you again for your insight and your information to our communities tonight. And y'all have a nice evening, and thank you for coming on Black Urban America.
Good
All
night.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. May I say one more thing? I would just like to get more stories out here about, so that we can hold people accountable for the injustices, the human rights articles on housing. We really need to hold that down and hold these people accountable for our injustices on every topic of housing.
Hey, you know, that's the type of information that will be on our website, which our website will be available in a couple of weeks. I have to go. And again, thank you, Ms. Parker.
Thanks.
Now, that is interesting. A sister from St. Louis, Missouri, another sister from Georgia, don't even know each other, have the same thinking and the same strategy for tackling this issue. My only concern is that why do we continue to go back to an institution like HUD and other institutions for the same type of treatment, where we should put our focus and place our own investment into ourselves, into our own strategy. Go to these Black banks, go to these Black credit unions, and try to establish some type of bridge between the underserved and the haves. Well, that's another week. And I'd like to thank all the listeners and the support. Again, I am because we are. We are because I am.
Hold it now.